Well, hello again. It's been a one of those busy days when it's possible to do a number of these recordings. We are working on page 53 of Esoteric Astrology. We've been discussing about what a world period may be and how variable that term may be, all the way from a period of rotation of the Earth's axis, a 25,000 year approximately. It's actually more than that, 25,920 approximately. A great Platonic year to a rotation of our Earth around the rotation of our solar system and all its planets around the Pleiades, or more likely a round, a complete round, or perhaps even a scheme round, which is larger still, or perhaps even a Mahamanvantara, or still greater than a Mahamanvantara. So often the term world period refers to a round. Anyway, for a long time during this cycle of reincarnations and periods of manifestation, the human being is conditioned almost entirely by the activity of the non-sacred planets. And then he discusses which they are. There are five petals which have to open before it becomes possible for the human being to really respond sacredly to the sacred planets. There may be response to the sacred planets in a non-sacred way, but the activity of the non-sacred planets is major during the first millions of years of human evolution. There are some people who have individualized even in Lemuria on the Earth chain and are still responding primarily to the non-sacred planets or to the sacred planets in a personal and non-sacred way. So it takes a long time to work ourselves into sensitivity to the truly sacred planets, the sacredness of them. That takes us to page 53. And then we have the five non-sacred planets. Eventually there will be 12 planets, we are told, and all of them eventually will be sacred, which means they will have passed their fifth initiation, whether that is a cosmic initiation or a lesser initiation has yet to be established. The Sun is veiling a planet. This is not the planet Vulcan or any of the other Vulcan, an undiscovered planet, or any of the discovered planets. It is a non-sacred secondary planet. I think this idea was most advanced by Dr. Baker, Theodore Baker, is it? He has the idea of a non-sacred secondary planet, which is veiled by the Sun. Another of my astrological friends think that it could be the planet Isis, which has a period of approximately 360 years. So its period has as many years, speculatively, as the Earth has days, and so there's a very close connection between that speculative planet and the Earth. The Moon veiling another non-sacred planet. The Sun was veiling a Ray 2 planet. The Moon is veiling a Ray 4 planet, and some speculative astrologers feel that it may be an etheric planet called Rex, which is fairly close. I'll have to brush up on that. It's near Mars, I think. It's not far from the Earth. It's not beyond Jupiter, I do believe. But that is simply speculation. What does not seem to be speculation is there is a planet, undiscovered, non-sacred, fourth ray, that the moon veils. It may be this planet Rex. When I worked with Charles Jayne, he was quite emphatic about the existence of this planet Rex. He didn't relate it to the fourth ray particularly, but he did insist on its orbit and its value in the human horoscope. Then there is the Earth itself, of course, thus far a non-sacred planet, but interestingly, sacred inwardly, whatever that means. There is a certain aspect of the Earth which must be considered sacred. It has yet to work itself into outer expression. Then Mars, a planet less advanced than the Earth, and definitely non-sacred at this point, farther behind in its initiatory process. And Pluto, even though it is an esoteric planet, it is still less sacred than Mars. Just because the scientists demote Pluto to kind of a planetoid or a non-planet or a minor planet does not mean that they are necessarily accurate from the occult perspective. Mars is the alter ego or the symbolic of the higher ego of Pluto, just as Venus is the alter ego or symbolic of the higher ego of the Earth. These are the five non-sacred planets. Sometimes I look at the piano and I see the seven white keys and the five black keys, and I think of the analogy that the seven white keys, which give us the C major scale, are related to the sacred planets and the black keys to the non-sacred planets, but this also has yet to be verified. All right, we will continue moving. Man, speaking symbolically, is the five-pointed star. That relates him to Leo, the most human of the signs, and the fifth sign, and relating to the solar nature, to the solar egoic lotus. When I say that, to man's solar egoic lotus. Man, speaking symbolically, is the five-pointed star, and at the fiery points, the forces of the man pour out, and upon each fiery point appears a center of reception. Well, this is very interesting. We might consider that the head, the two hands, and the two feet are those fiery points, but it could mean something else. Suffice it to say, the fivefold links, which are the solar angels, must have their five fold points of reception in the man. There must be a correspondence between that which the solar angel can give of its fivefold nature and that which man can receive. It is possible then at the present moment to consider that man is particularly fivefold because two of his chakras are not functioning fully, just the way two of the continents are not fully developed, and with respect to the eventual seven centers of the Earth, upon the Earth, only five of them are active. So man perhaps is keeping pace with the planet with five centers developed. We might wonder whether eventually man will become the seven-pointed star. Man, speaking symbolically, is the five-pointed star, and at the fiery points the forces of the man pour out, and upon each fiery point appears a center of reception. So let us say that for most human beings the base of the spine is non-receptive and non-radiatory, except that it provides for the survival of the human being, and that the head center itself is not receptive for most human beings and not radiatory for most. The rest of the centers are active to a certain extent. This is the fivefold nature of the present man, but the sevenfold nature is coming. The fivefold nature is fairly Brahmic. Five is the number of the previous solar system, a Brahmic solar system, and seven will be the number of the present solar system. And what will we be able to say about ninefold man in the next solar system? This is, of course, pictorially expressed but the meaning is clear. Well, man is two types of pentagrams. He is the higher pentagram. He is the egoic lotus, the soul, in its fivefold nature by one method of counting. And he is the lower mind as well, and the personality which can be symbolized by the inverted five-pointed star without evil connotation, but simply given its orientation into matter. Take those two pentagrams together, and you have the complete human being, and the number is 10, or the number is 1. However, as man nears the path of discipleship, the influence... Yeah, man is the five-pointed star, okay? Well, from this point of view, let's see here. Right. Just take me a moment here. Right. And so we say that man, speaking symbolically, is the five-pointed star, and this 5 points has to do with the 5 non-sacred planets. He will progress to a 7-pointed star. I just realized, of course, we've been talking about the number 5, and man's fivefold nature can be considered in either a sacred or a non-sacred way. He says, this is, of course, pictorially expressed, but the meaning is clear. However, as man nears the path of discipleship, which technically I think you can think of beginning at the first initiation, the real path of discipleship, when a person is a little chela, that's the real path of discipleship. As man nears the path of discipleship, the influence of the sacred planets becomes increasingly effective until after the final and 5th initiation, the non-sacred planets have no effect. But that's very interesting that, let me do this correctly, that until the 5th initiation, they do. So, let's put that down, until the fifth initiation, the non-sacred planets do have an effect, though the initiate wields their energies potently as they pour into and through his vehicles of reception, of response, and of expression, for all 3 activities and purposes must be noted. He has reception, response, and expression. Man can wield the energies of the non-sacred planets even at a high initiatory level, even though he is not necessarily affected by them. So, you know, we see that some of these planets are, after all, hierarchical planets, hierarchical rulers. Pluto in Pisces, for instance, although that would affect a man, I suppose, at the 4th initiation, particularly whether it would affect him at the 5th when the base of the spine center becomes maximally active, I'm not certain there's a possibility, but he says after the final and 5th initiation, which he is not really the final initiation, but he calls it that for present purposes, the non-sacreds have no effect, but they can't. But their energy can be wielded. The other planets do have an effect. So, just pause for a moment and realize that earlier he said that the planets in the houses affected primarily circumstances, and now he's talking about high levels of initiation when the sacred planets can be effective and influential in the life of the man. So we must always hold our judgment in reservation when a statement is made, and wonder and look for if there are modifying statements, such as this. Okay, so when it comes to energies, we receive, we respond, and we express. And we must note these 3. The energies of the 12 constellations are blended with those of the 12 planets. That's what we were talking about earlier when we discussed that this blending occurred in two phases, one in which the sun sign dominated and the other in which the driving energies of the rising sign were emerging as dominant. The energies of the 12 constellations are blended with those of the 12 planets, just the way the energy of the esoteric ruler is blended with the preceding energies of the exoteric ruler. It supersedes but does not eliminate the esoteric ruler. But their power to evoke response and to be consciously received, recognized, and employed is dependent entirely upon the type of response mechanism of the planetary life and of the individual man. Well, you know, I think the implication there is that planetary logoi have an effect upon other planetary logoi, and it depends on the response apparatus of the particular planetary logos, what type of effect another planetary logos will have upon him. So, you see, planets are not sources simply to be relegated to the houses of the horoscope and thought of as determining only the circumstantial aspect in the life of man. They have much higher targets. They have much higher levels which they can influence and affect. Okay, so we have the power to evoke response, to receive these energies, to recognize them and employ them. That's another way of looking. Receive, recognize, and employ. That's another one of those important triplicities when it comes to our dealing with energies. And the degree to which we can do that depends entirely upon how refined or developed our response mechanism may be, and even how refined or developed the planetary life may be. And, of course, since those energies have to come to us through the planetary life, the degree of sensitivity and the development of the response mechanism of the planetary logos will affect the manner in which we can receive, recognize, and employ these energies. It has been rightly said that consciousness is dependent upon the vehicles of consciousness, which ever must be refined so that consciousness can be elevated, upon their point of development, and upon the ability of the individual to identify himself with the energies and impulses which are reaching him. So, you know, if our vehicles of consciousness are relatively crude, the energies which are trying to reach us do not get through in their pure form. We have to learn how to identify ourselves with the actual energies and in their pure form and not in their distorted form. So we're talking about what that which consciousness is dependent upon. It is not dependent only upon that which is already recognized, a recognized part of himself. So consciousness is dependent on our vehicles and the degree to which we can recognize the energies which are attempting to enter, the degree to which we can attune with them, identify with them. Let's read that again. It has been rightly said that consciousness is dependent upon the vehicles of consciousness. Do we have a pure astral body? That will determine our astral consciousness. Do we have a pure mental body? That will determine the type of consciousness we experience within it. Upon their point of development, upon the ability of the individual to identify himself with the energies and the impulses which are reaching him. The energies and the impulses which are reaching him, and is not dependent. Consciousness is not dependent only upon that which is already a recognized aspect, part or aspect of himself, because consciousness is always growing. There are always impacts which are attempting to increase the scope and depth of our consciousness. So our consciousness is not only dependent upon the present condition in which we find ourselves. It might be said that the higher response to the realities and qualities revealed and made possible by the impact of energy from the zodiacal signs is somewhat dependent upon the waning influence of the planets to hold down the consciousness of man. Very interesting. Although, you know, zodiacal lords are much greater beings than planetary lords, and even though the planets can be effective, even up to the fifth initiation, perhaps beyond, at least even the non-sacred planets can be effective up to the fifth initiation, they, as lesser lords, eventually wane in their influence, and then the zodiacal constellations, the zodiacal signs, become more influential. So there's a higher response involved here. It's the realities and qualities of the zodiacal signs, and the planets must wane. So you know how it often is. We have to stop doing something before it becomes possible to do something higher, and we have to stop being under the sway exclusively of the planets before the zodiacal energies can reveal their qualities. Remember that the zodiacal energies, as we looked at just a little while ago, do affect soul development, but they also work through Shambhala and are expressive in terms of the monad. So we ponder on this, for it embodies a deeper esoteric truth. A deep esoteric truth. What will we de-emphasize in order to emphasize something higher? So somehow in our life, DK is suggesting, that we must allow the planetary, PT planetary influence to wane somewhat before the full zodiacal influence can be felt and appreciated. All right. Thus, two potent streams of energy, cosmic and systemic, and even though DK does call the planetary logoi cosmic beings, in this particular context he's looking at them as systemic beings. Thus, two potent streams of energy, cosmic, that is zodiacal, and systemic, reach man via the conditioning planetary centers of force. Another thing he can be saying here is that the energies of the three great constellations and the zodiacal energies reach man via the conditioning planetary centers of force. The seven, presumably sacred, planetary schemes in the solar system and their corresponding seven centers in the planet on which we live and pour into the symbolic 12 houses through their medium. He is trying to tie everything together, give us the grand synthesis of the three great constellations, the 12 zodiacal signs, the seven major planetary schemes, five minor, and the 12 houses of the horoscope, which give us influence upon circumstance. Thus, two potent streams of energy, cosmic and systemic, and I suspect that the systemic energies, in this context, are considered planetary, reach man via the conditioning planetary centers of force. They condition life within the lower worlds and also, in some cases, in the higher worlds. The seven planetary schemes in the solar system and the corresponding seven centers in the planet on which we live. Our planet has, well, let's call it a planetary globe. And it has chakras on many different levels and seven major chakras, presumably, on each level. We also have the seven continents, and we also have the seven major city-like centers, Darjeeling, Tokyo, Geneva, London, and New York. Five of those exist, and seven will. So there are a number of septenates on our planet which receive the energies of the seven planetary schemes. We would assume that the chakra systems of the chain lords and the chakra systems of the globe lords would receive these sevenfold planetary energies. And they pour into the 12 symbolic 12 houses through the medium of the planets. When we really want to know what's happening circumstantially, we look at planets in our houses, whatever house system we may use. DK does not deny the value of the house systems. He simply is telling us that in the future, the arms of the horoscope will be considered even more important. And these arms correspond to the houses, but probably have a more spiritual meaning as the planet works out in an arm of the horoscope. Okay. It is for this reason that our solar system is spoken of as one of intrinsic duality, love, wisdom. And that the major task of man is the regulation of the pairs of opposites. Well, he's talking about the two potent streams of energy, and presumably one of them is associated with wisdom and one of them is associated with love. It would be difficult to differentiate here which is which. But we have two potent streams of energy, and just above he's talking about the influence of the zodiac and the influence of the planets. Okay. The energies of the 12 constellations are blended with those of the 12 planets. That's the dual stream, and that is related to the love wisdom of our solar system. But one would think that would also be the case with other solar systems if they have planets and are related to the same zodiacal signs, such as, let us say, the stars of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. They are quite close to us, and they also would be related to these great 12 conditioning constellations. So there are two potent streams of energy, and he says, it is for this reason that our solar system is spoken of as one of intrinsic duality, love, wisdom, and that the major task of man is the regulation of the pairs of opposites. Is he saying here that the zodiacal signs and the planets are opposites? Are the zodiacal signs and the planets opposites in a way? Or are they hierarchically related, one superior to the other? The theme of duality, let's just accept that at face value, the theme of duality, therefore, runs through the whole story of man's development. There is always something higher bringing him forward, luring him on, and something lower, which is attempting to hold him back. So we have the higher and lower pairs of opposites especially. We cannot really think of love and wisdom, however, as opposites, because they both seem to cooperate very well with each other. The theme of duality, therefore, runs through the whole story of man's development. Upon all the three planes of human unfoldment, the reconciliation goes forward. We can call this the reconciliation of the pairs of opposites. And certainly when one looks at the type of reconciliation we have to carry forward, it's a reconciliation initially between the soul and the personality, and thus between the zodiacal signs and the planets. We remember that in this section just a little while ago, Master DK is basically telling us that the zodiacal signs are correlated with soul development and with subjectivity, and the planets are correlated more with conditioning influences which condition our circumstances. Okay, so that is a little discussion of duality and how duality is related to the blending of the zodiacal constellations or signs, the energies of them, with the energies of the planets. Okay, Now we have a little tabulation. Upon the physical plane, we find the merging of the dense and etheric forces. He's going to give us various of the pairs of opposites. So here are various of the pairs of opposites. Upon the physical plane, and this took place back in old Lemuria as one of the initiations of that period, upon the physical plane, we find the merging of the dense and etheric forces. This is consummated on the path of purification when, according to the energies within the etheric body, we can control the strictly dense physical promptings and impulses which have to do with the third aspect of divinity, and not with the second aspect at all. You know, so many of the appetites that we are prompted to follow, so many of the instincts have their root in the dense physical nature, and we, by bringing higher energies into our etheric nature, have to learn how to control these. This leads up to the first initiation, in which a degree of that purification is substantiated as achieved. Pairs of opposites upon the astral plane. Upon the astral plane, there must come the resolution of the pairs of opposites, and this is the pull of the personality and the pull of the soul. This is consummated upon the path of discipleship, and the battle is fought out on the astral plane. Higher desires and lower desires, spiritual desires and personal desires, a kind of a Kurukshetra, which many of us have experienced at different times of our life and lives, and in which even the planetary logos is experiencing now. You know, you would think that we, as disciples, being somewhat mentally polarized, or almost there perhaps, would be beyond this type of Kurukshetra, this type of battle on the astral plane, which is so common to the ordinary non-aspiring human being, but we are not. We are still somewhat subject to it. There are high desires leading us, aspirations leading us into the world of soul, and there are strictly personal pulls leading us back into the world of personality. And pretty much at the third initiation, the bird on the branch flies free of the counter pulls. That old stanza used in Atlantean days at the time of the third initiation describes this very beautifully. And then upon the mental plane, the angel of the presence and the dweller on the threshold are brought face to face, and their synthesis, which is really a synthesis of the man as the angel and man as the personality, is brought about on the path of initiation. And the final synthesis of this, in a way, does not occur until the fifth initiation, although a good part of that synthesis is achieved at the third degree. Well, really, at the third degree, the man only catches a glimpse of the full nature of the dweller, I think. This is in Glamour, A World Problem, and I think it would be good in Glamour, A World Problem, I'll put the word glimpse, G-L-I-M-P-S-E, and there's only one, and we can see that in the third initiation, the initiate can employ the intuition for right perception of truth, and in that initiation, he catches the first real glimpse of the dweller on the threshold and the angel of the presence. This is a very mental initiation, and it allows him to focus within the causal body. In the fourth initiation, the initiate demonstrates his ability to produce complete at-one-ment between the higher and lower aspect of the soul in manifestation, because the personality is the lower aspect of the soul in manifestation, and sees the dweller on the threshold, which is the refined, purified, and empowered personality, merge into the angel of the presence. And even at the fifth initiation, this is involved, interestingly. In the fifth initiation, and here words fail to express the truth, he sees the dweller on the threshold, the angel, and the presence merged into a divine synthesis, and this presence is none other than the monad. So the dweller is with us for a long time. So it's upon the mental plane that the true angel of the presence, which is expressing itself on the higher mental plane, and the dweller on the threshold, which is also expressing itself on the mental plane, because it is, in a way, the entire personality focused on the fourth subplane of the mental plane and connected with the mental unit, they are brought face to face. Their synthesis proceeds later upon the path of initiation. We've just seen that the real merging of the dweller and the angel does not occur until the fourth initiation. But at least they are brought face to face, and a clear sight of the dweller and the angel exists for the one who is reaching that degree. I just noticed I look like some sort of head suspended in the dark. Well, anyway, the room is dark. I've been in this room for quite a while. And, you know, the sun has changed position and so forth. But I trust you'll be able to see me and hear me. All right. Let's see where we are. What is true of man in this connection is also true of humanity as a whole. There is a sense in which the angel of humanity must face its dweller. In the great war of the previous century, which may not quite be over, perhaps to run its third phase, hopefully subjectively, the dweller and angel of humanity are facing each other. This is not totally realized by all members of humanity, but certainly we see the best and the worst of humanity being displayed in this warlike situation. So what is true of man in this connection, in relation to the dweller and the angel, that profound duality perceived in relation to the fourth subplane of the mental plane and the second subplane of the mental plane, the angel focusing here on the second subplane of the mental plane and the dweller on the fourth subplane of the mental plane, what is true of the individual, of man, is also true of humanity as a whole, of the planetary logos of the earth, as of all planetary logoi and a solar logoi. All have their dweller, all have their angel. What we have to deal with now is the dweller of humanity. We cannot really deal with what may be the planetary dweller, that is, up to the planetary logos himself as he proceeds through various initiations. Actually, he is passing through a kind of fourth initiation at this moment, although a cosmic second awaits him. So he may not be totally ready for the merging of his own angel of the presence with his own dweller. And our solar logos, we may say the same, because he is verging on the third cosmic initiation and perhaps passing through a kind of subsidiary fourth initiation, but we can see that the complete merging of angel and dweller does not occur until the fourth degree, and I would assume this means the fourth cosmic degree for the solar logos and for the planetary logos. And our planetary logos is far from his fourth cosmic degree. Our solar logos is closer. You can check out for the hints on this, page 384 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So, what is true of man in this connection is also true of humanity as a whole. It's true of the planetary logos of the earth. It's true of all planetary logo. They all have their dweller aspect. And the need to infuse and fuse with that dweller, the angel and the dweller must merge if the second and third aspects of divinity are to merge, and it's true also of a solar logos, but this merging for the solar logos lies very far ahead, because it may be that the solar logos is planned, that the solar logos will take his crucifixion initiation in this solar system. He will take the great renunciation, the fourth initiation, when that merging can occur, and it is also possible Though not absolutely confirmed, it is suggested in the teaching that he may even take his fifth cosmic initiation. The analogy between the fusion of the pairs of opposites, for instance, upon the physical plane, can be seen in the conscious and directed fusion of the planetary forces with the energy of any specific planet or groups of planets. The analogy between the fusion of the pairs of opposites, for instance, upon the physical plane, and do we mean etheric and physical, or do we mean perhaps the sexual relationship, the fusion of the pairs of opposites, can be seen in the conscious and directed fusion of the planetary forces with the energy of any specific planet or group of planets. Well, anyway, energies, which represent the higher aspect, and forces must merge. So we'll put this down. Energies and forces must merge. We're talking always about the pairs of opposites, and usually not on the same level. There are horizontal pairs of opposites. You know, we have heat and we have cold. We have hard, we have soft. I mean, one is not better than the other. But when we're dealing with soul and personality, one is definitely higher than the other. This is not true. Poles and counterpoles upon the astral plane, and we are looking for the aspectual integration of the sun sign and the planets. We are looking to harmonize their relationships. So there is an analogy here. When we are able, even if we have tough aspects, to harmonize the relationship between the sun sign and the planets, then we have the analogy here to offsetting the force of the pairs of opposites on the astral plane, and then there will be a harmony and right progression, and the man will not be pulled below, held below, and prevented from moving on. There's going to be another analogy here, I suspect. The analogy can be carried forward onto the mental plane, and when the it's very interesting, and when the energies of the sun sign and of the rising sign are coherently blended and expressed, in the case of both the individual or the planetary life, there comes that point of crisis wherein the soul and the personality can be brought face to face, and that is the dweller and the angel. The personality stands for the dweller, and the soul for the angel. So that is a mental happening. Now, very, very interesting. We have an analogy here of how to reconcile pairs of opposites on different planes. Does he talk about how to do this? The fusion of the pairs of opposites on the physical plane can be seen in the direct fusion of the planetary forces with the energy of any particular planet or group of planets. Well, we're talking about etheric and dense physical fusion, and we're talking about planetary forces and energies. And we're trying to blend the higher with the lower on any particular planet or group of planets. Then we go on to the astral plane, and we try to blend the sun sign with the other planets and bring them into harmony, and then we move on to the mental plane, and we try to harmonize the energies of the sun sign and the energies of the rising sign, coherently blended and expressed. And you have to ask yourself, can I do that? Can I do that right now, even if my sun sign and my rising sign are in, difficult aspect? Are my sun sign and rising sign, regardless of what their aspect may be, are they in a position to be coherently blended and expressed? Then we will no longer have warfare upon the mental plane, the struggle between the opposites, a warfare upon the astral plane with the sun and the planets, and warfare upon the physical plane between the energy aspect and the force aspect of any planet or groups of planets. DK is wonderful, and sometimes when I'm reading this, it's just as if I've read it for the first time. I know you all have that experience from time to time, and I'm having it right now. How could I have overlooked the importance of this particular section. How could I have not kept it in my mind? Well, maybe 1% or 2% of what is given by DK is kept rightly in mind. I used to say I think I could maybe grasp 5% of what he's written, and the further I go and the deeper I study, my percentage falls. I think I'm down to 2.5% and rapidly falling. And maybe I will even find these percentages to be an exaggeration. One cannot help but be humbled in the face of the magnificent presentation which Master DK has given us on behalf of the hierarchy. It's just astonishing. It is the esoteric essence of so much of what is hidden in other traditions, and here it is clearly given in the King's English, you know, so we are to be grateful, grateful for what is given. Okay, the angel of the presence distributing solar fire. Some people distinguish between the angel of the presence and the solar angel. Perhaps they consider the angel of the presence to be the actual solar angel, and the solar angel to be that part of the solar angel which underlies the egoic lotus, and consider the egoic lotus as the solar angel. I have never, with consistency, made any such discrimination. Just as I tend not to discriminate between the planetary logos and the heavenly man, because so often they are used in a manner equivalent. But heavenly man, I think, can also refer to, there are degrees of heavenly man. So a planetary logos is a heavenly man, a chain lord is a heavenly man, a globe lord is a heavenly man, but you cannot call them planetary logoi. Some have said that when you speak of the planetary logos, it emphasizes the monadic nature of that being. And when you speak of the heavenly man, it emphasizes the soul nature of that same being. And it's a good distinction, but I haven't found it to bear out in so many contexts. Anyway, you can make up your own mind as you study this, not only now, but in centuries ahead, at the wonderful new esoteric schools, which will be established, 14 of them and then more, in the centuries ahead, to bring down to earth the true esotericism and train those who can undergo the rigors into service to humanity on behalf of the hierarchy. The angel of the presence distributing solar fire and holding focused electric fire. That's quite an important statement. So the angel of the presence distributes solar fire, but focuses electric fire. After all, it has its own monadic nature, doesn't it? But that's one of the only times I've seen this. The angel of the presence, that's Age of Pisces. Let's see. Angel of the presence holds electric fire focused. Interesting. And the dweller on the threshold expressing and utilizing fire by friction. See, in a way, within the angel of the presence and within any second aspect demonstration, the first aspect is held latent because the time for its full expression has not yet come. We're not in that final or sixth solar system. The first aspect of divinity is expressing itself in a mediated manner. Anyway, they know each other with intimate occult knowledge. This occurs on the plane of mind, starting at the third initiation, and increasingly as we move towards the fourth initiation, and even the fifth, when the angel and the dweller, whatever that is, could be a Maya Varupa at that time, and also the presence, all three blend together, and the triangle becomes one. Excuse me. The door then stands open wide, through which the life and light of the three major constellations can, after the third initiation, that's the point, the three major constellations after the third initiation can be occultly available to the initiate, be he a liberated human being or a planetary logos. And of course, it's not just to the human being that the three great constellations extend their influence, but they are so great that they have amazing power over the planetary logo as well, and even over the solar logos. So they pour forth their radiation in different measure, or shall we say it can be received differently by the three classifications of beings, the liberated human being or initiate, the initiate planetary logos, and the initiate solar logos, the three great constellations. Because think of it, even the tiniest of those three, which is Sirius, has an amazing effect upon our solar logos. Okay, we can do a little more, I think. You know, as I go over this material, I'm just, you know, one would like to ponder, to dwell upon it for a long time and extract all that is hidden. But all right, we are going over this book somewhat carefully, and there will come thoughts to you about what has not really been fathomed, and there will come ideas to you about what might further be fathomed based upon the hints we have generated. So the angel of the presence, distributing solar fire and holding focused solar fire, electric fire. Wow, that really has to be remembered, because there is electric fire there. And in a way, the entire jewel in the lotus is a representation of electric fire, although you could say that is more the creation of the monad than it is the creation of the solar angel. And the dweller on the threshold, expressing and utilizing fire by friction, know each other with intimate occult knowledge, and this is happening at the higher initiations. The door stands wide open, and the three major constellations can express themselves through the liberated human being, who is the initiate, and through a planetary logos at various stages of his development, and probably especially once he is an initiate planetary logos. When astrologers understand the true significance of the constellation Gemini, the twins, the head of the cosmic Christ, a very, very important constellation, which is inspiring, I think, Master DK and Master KH and many of the revealers of the ageless wisdom. When the astrologers understand the true significance of the constellation Gemini, the twins, and the dual forces which pour through this sign, the forces in conflict, as they are sometimes called, or the quarreling brothers. Watch out when you have Mars in Gemini, because it sets up a good quarrel. And the forces which beat upon our planetary life, then the true method of resolving the dualities will be known. Now, I don't know if it's said here, but we do know that Gemini is used as a mediating force between the pairs of opposites. I'll call them the zodiacal pairs of opposites. You know, there's Aries, Libra, Gemini. Taurus, Scorpio, Gemini. We'll skip Gemini for a moment. Then there's Cancer, Capricorn, Gemini. There is Leo, Aquarius, Gemini. There's Pisces, Virgo, Gemini. And when Gemini is involved itself, Pisces becomes the mediating influence. We discuss that later. That's the opposition between Gemini, Sagittarius, with Pisces as the mediating force. So we have to understand the great pairs of opposites by understanding the sign Gemini. The pairs of opposites, higher and lower, are always quarreling. That means they're out of adjustment for a while. And those pairs of opposites under Gemini can be soul and personality, but they can also be the spirit and the soul-infused personality. They can be Sirius and the Sun. They can be different constellations which hold to each other that kind of pairs of opposites relationship. So, you know, we have Pollux, which is a great supergiant star, and we have three pairs of double stars that are called Castor. It's really a visually single star, but it's really six stars. And those represent all the forces which are lower than the force of spirit itself. So everything that is generated by spirit, the six, pulls in an opposite direction from spirit itself until there is a reconciliation. So anyway, we need to learn to reconcile the pairs of opposites, and especially upon our planet, which is a planet of magnetic adjustment. We become adjudicators between the pairs of opposites. We are involved in magnetic work. Let's just see if we can find that. Let's just say something about the school. Adjudicator. Adjudicator. Oh, that's not being spelled right. Adjudicate. Well, I think I'm not going to do too well here. School. Magnetic. Oh, I see. I know what the problem is. I still have glamour checked. And you can't find a reference. Adjudicator. All right, let's call this just School of Magnetic something. And let's see if we can find it. 1, 2, 3. There it is. The School of Magnetic Response. This is Earth. Another name given to its pupils is the Graduates of Painful Endeavor, or the Adjudicators Between the Polar Opposites. A further hint to be taken in connection with the two names given above is that its graduates are said to undergo examination on the third subplane of the astral plane, and probably that is the that is the third, counting from the top down. So the constellation Gemini has a tremendous relationship to our Earth. It provided, in a way, the door of entry for the solar angels, and in another way, it represents the pillars of wisdom through which advancing human beings can pass into the higher life. So Gemini gives a huge angelic content to our Earth, just as Sagittarius promotes the animal content. All right, I do believe we have reached the point. I realize that I must present quite a spectacle here in the dark. Excuse me. We've done 6 of these today. I don't know whether there will be a 7th. I'll try to get them out to you as soon as I can. We have gone as far as page 56. So this is Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 26. That's 36, number 26. Can I type it? And up to ending page 56. And I believe it's from page 53 to page 56. So we will together work the great invocation, as we always do, because ritualistically it's important. Yes. All right. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Friends, we are making progress. What are we up to? Page 56 now, and I think this opening section has only 90 or 100 pages, so by the time we've done 50 of these 50 of these webinars, we will be through the introduction, but in a way the other parts of the books will flow more easily. I wish I could talk through quite a number of these books. Anyway, I've done most of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire and half of The Rays and the Initiations, and that's done in more careful written language. The quality of what we're doing here is a little more spontaneous, a little more ramifying and rambling and taking in various considerations, a different style. Perhaps it's less concrete, but it's what I can do at the moment. So we will go on to Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 27 shortly. Okay, bye for now.